It's happening, readers. We have heard that you want paperbacks from our tailored book recommendation service called TBR. And I'm delighted to let you know that we're going to be in sync with your request. That's right. We're bringing paperbacks. Whether you hate carrying around bulky hardcovers, you're on a budget, you want a wider range of recommendations, or all of the above, now you can get a paperback subscription from TBR curated just for you by one of our bibliologists. Get all the details at mytbr.co. That's mytbr.co. We're bringing paperbacks.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to When in Romance, where we get to talk about all things Romancelandia just after Valentine's Day. I am Jess.
And I am Trisha.
And we are recording on Thursday, February 15th, 2024. It has been a surprisingly good Valentine's Day romance season, wouldn't you say, Trisha?
I absolutely would. I compare the romance coverage, and we'll get into it a little bit more later, but we got this year as compared to what we used to see. And I think there are many notable differences, but the quality is the result of all of them. So yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it's a happy surprise for us here in mid-February. Before we get into all that though, Jess, why don't you, as we have now passed another Valentine's Day, tell me, what romance are you reading in this month of February, the month of all the romances?
Well, I have been reading a bright pink, salmon, orange, some color, romance.
It's good. We'll have to find out. Color's important, because if it's blue, I have no interest. I'm out. I'm out.
Let's call it coral.
Fair.
A romance called Play to Win by Jody Slaughter. It's her second traditionally published book, but she has also published things independently before, and maybe will again. And this one, she is also going to be at the Tucson Festival of Books, so I'm trying to get through at least a few of the 15 authors that are coming. This book is an interesting one because it is a second chance marriage in trouble, which I don't read very much of the first, but absolutely adore the second, as you might know. And the main character wins the lottery, and she has to deal with the fact that she is technically still married.
Yeah.
And the two of them have to sort of figure out what they want in life, what they want from each other, if they want to try again, if they want to say goodbye, you know, all of those things when you have estranged spouses. Mm-hmm. And Jody Slaughter is just a genius with words. She will pull you in immediately. And I'm excited to get back to it because I had to take a break from it for a while. But now I can sit down with it again.
I have to say, also, you kind of snuck it in there. Hats off to you. If you have 15 romance authors coming to the Tucson Festival of Books, do you remember what was it like 3 or 4 years ago where they would give you the budget for one?
Yeah. Like,
that's amazing.
Thank you.
Congratulations. I mean, it's a lot of books for you to read.
But
how nice for all of the attendees to have romance so well represented.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
So I am reading, I assume that you are deeply interested, A book called Olivia and the Masked Duke. It's by Grace Calloway. It is the first in a series that I sort of stumbled upon on social media because I think the last book in the series maybe came out like last month. And it is the first, the series is called Lady Charlotte's Society of Angels, wherein a when I say older widow, I mean she's in like her 30s, is recruiting young women to her quote unquote charity, which is actually sort of like a private investigative spy agency that helps and supports women who are in, you know, dangerous situations or just kind of powerless situations, perilous situations. Her name is Charlotte. She goes by Charlie, and the society is called the Angels. So this is very much a Charlie's Angels set in like Victorian romance times. And it is very charming so far. The first book is a friends to lovers book. There's kind of an age gap. She's 19, he's 30 or 31. But they very much address it head on. They're very clear that there was like nothing romantic happening between these people. And she started to develop feelings for him when she stumbled upon him, let's just say, in an intimate situation with another woman.
Oops.
Yeah. And kind of got very curious and interested. And so their relationship is developing. The book is much steamier than I was expecting. Like a lot, there is more kind of, it's more flames, I would say, than I am generally used to seeing in a historical romance. There's a BDSM element. There's a lot going on here. So I don't know. I'm only partway through this Charlie's Angels book that is the first in the series, but so far so good with Olivia and the Masked Duke.
You know, Grace Calloway is one of those names that I've seen a lot, and I've been meaning to try her out. And this is just another impetus to, like, make sure that I check out her books.
I would highly recommend it. I will also say, I said it was a Victorian romance. It might be Regency. I don't remember if there are trains or not. So sorry if I got that wrong. But you know, it's historical one way or another. So that is that. Jess, you want to talk a little bit about Read Harder?
Absolutely. 2024 is, as you might know, the 10th year of the Read Harder Challenge. Join Book Riot as we make our way through 24 tasks meant to expand our reading horizons and diversify our TBRs. You can get book recommendations for each task, and you can do that by signing up for the Read Harder newsletter. If you become a paid subscriber, you get even more recommendations, plus community features where you can connect with a community of passionate, like-minded readers in a cozy and supportive corner of the internet. Visit bookriot.com/readharder to sign up. That's bookriot.com/readharder.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about Valentine's Day coverage of romance, but before we do, we'll take a quick ad break.
It's happening, readers. We have heard that you want paperbacks from our tailored book recommendation service called TBR, and I am delighted to let you know that we're going to be in sync with your request. That's right. We're bringing paperbacks. Whether you hate carrying around bulky hardcovers, you're on a budget, you want a wider range of recommendations, or all of the above, now you can get a paperback subscription from TBR curated just for you by one of our bibliologists. Get all the details at mytbr.co. That's mytbr.co. We're bringing paperbacks.
And we are back, and some of you may have seen that Jess and I got to actually have, last time we talked, two different romance conversations in one evening. It was a rollicking good time. But we actually talked with Jeff O'Neill, who is the CEO at Book Riot, also the co-host of the OG Book Riot podcast that he hosts generally with Rebecca Shinsky. She wasn't able to join us, but the three of us talked romance, you know, just on that Book Riot sort of main feed. I thought it was fun. Jess, I had a great time.
I did. I had a great time. We talked about a lot of stuff that might be not less interesting, but more familiar to people who might listen to When in Romance or who are more familiar with just romance topics in general. But I thought that we covered a lot of really interesting stuff and got to do some good recommendations.
Indeed, we did. And you could tell Jeff, we made a romance fan out of him. I could just tell. I could absolutely tell. As Jess said, a lot of the kind of discussion will ring sort of familiar to folks who are regular listeners of this podcast, but we will still link to it in case you are interested. I actually listened back to it. I thought it was delightful. You in particular, Jess, I thought were a delight. And a part of the reason that we did it in February is because Book Riot, as everyone else, is paying a little extra attention to romance coverage in February, what with Valentine's Day happening. Just like you said, I thought the coverage was not bad. I don't know. I know you were reading a little bit of it just before we started. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think, well, for one thing, a lot of the stuff that I saw that was specifically talking about romance trends and tropes and everything else were familiar names. Like, they were people who have a long-standing history with romance, writing about romance for certain outlets, that even though they were written at a more national scale, they were written by people who know what they're talking about, which was really nice to
see. I noticed the same thing for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And you noticed, Trisha, that there was a large theme, which isn't surprising.
Yeah, boy, we're going hard into the romantic fantasy, or I think we've lost the battle. I think we have to call it romanticy now, because I don't think we can avoid it, which is, as you can tell, a portmanteau of romantic or romance and fantasy. It was wild. I kind of, you know, I mentioned to you earlier that I thought it was a theme. I couldn't tell you, but you never know, right? Like, you never know when you're sort of in this stuff, or am I just seeing it on social media, or were there all these articles? Mm-hmm. I, within 5 minutes, found like 6 different articles explicitly about romanticy that have all been published in February. And like you said, one of the really nice things about them is that many of them, the calls are no longer coming from outside the house. You know what I mean? Like, it's it feels, a lot of the coverage used to feel as if once a year, somebody who writes about books or writes about culture got assigned to figure out what on earth is going on with all these books, with all the sex in them. Like, what is this? But the articles are increasingly being written by fans or people who are major players in the genre and in the industry. Our friend Sarah Wendell wrote, I thought, a very fun explanation of romanticy for the Washington Post that we can link to. Maureen Lee Lenker, who writes for Entertainment Weekly, did one. I listened to a podcast called Today Explained that was about, quote unquote, fairy smut. they interviewed Catherine Van Arendonk from Vulture, who I don't think generally writes about romance, but made it very clear that she is a fan when she was talking about it. So it was just nice to have people who like it explaining it and not trying to like make excuses for it. You know what I mean? Like, there was not that vibe of, well, you know, it's just a fun little fantasy getaway, blah, 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 blah. It was people talking about like, this is what appeals to people about this genre. And I don't know. I found it very refreshing.
I did too. And it like, it made me think more about sort of what, might draw people to certain big names in romanticy. Like, I will admit, I haven't read a Sarah J. Maas book in a decade because I started reading Throne of Glass. I was very interested in it, and then I suddenly wasn't. And I fell behind on all of my reading. And looking at the, like, 9,000 page Crescent City books does not draw me to wanting to pick them up. But, you know, thinking Maureen's article in particular about what might draw readers to books that aren't even like smut, but that people want to call smut because that's the word. And thinking about, you know, the positivity of positive sexual experiences and dealing with all kinds of trauma and terror while also being able to enjoy a sexual experience as opposed to sexual violence like we've seen in a lot of male-centered fantasy is it's something that I hadn't thought about in those words. But there is something to be said about getting to have a big epic story while also having the romance arc, which we talked about with Jeff a bit, because since this is a big thing, like, that's a big thing to think about. But yeah, so I think, you know, we're going deeper into the whys in some of these articles, and I think that's really great. And the fact that they're happening now instead of off season, as it were, means that more eyes are going to be on it because people are thinking about romance in particular because of this sort of manufactured love holiday.
Yes. Yeah, indeed. And I think it's, I'm not a big romantasy reader, although it was funny when people were talking about some of the writers. It's funny that you say you haven't read a Sarah J. Maas book in a decade, because I think there are a lot of people out there who don't realize she has been writing them for more than a decade. You know, these authors have been around forever. It's just that this is where the interest is going. And, you know, a name that keeps coming up is Nalini Singh, who I absolutely love. I have read more of what I would call her sci-fi stuff. I haven't read her Archangel series, which I think probably fits a little more in this genre. Well, and Jennifer L. Armentrout used to do, she may still, I think she still does her conference. And when that started, it was largely focused on YA and sort of romanticy, paranormal kind of stuff. So this has definitely existed for a long time. I think you're right that it's really interesting, and probably good that this is when it's getting that that new focus. So I don't know. I'm interested in what you think, Jess, when a subgenre takes over in this way, right? Like paranormal and vampire stuff did 15 years ago. I don't know when Twilight came out. That's actually probably the best example, although I'm sure there are other sort of smaller scale examples that I'm not thinking of. Do you think it is generally good for the genre? Do you think it brings more people in? Or do you think that the people who are reading these books generally, as we kind of talked about with Jeff, don't consider themselves romance readers?
I think it's somewhere in between. Like, it's definitely good for the genre because people will find something and then want more of that thing. And people will, and they'll be able to explore and go sort of deep into the backlist of people like Jennifer L. Armentrout, of people like Nalini Singh. Like, so I think it's good at that level, but then, like we talked about, there are those people who will find that one book and they might be Sarah J. Maas readers, but they don't consider themselves romance readers. They're not part of the genre. They just really like this one author and then they read elsewhere. But I think, you know, weirdly, to think of it as a subgenre, I think rom-com did this for us a couple of years ago, too. Like, people who didn't read romance found Talia Hibbert and were like, this is amazing. I want more of this. And I think, you know, like, little splashes like that can broaden the genre in itself, but also broaden the readership. So I think it will generally be beneficial to the genre. Whether that means that we'll see a couple of years of different kinds of romantic fantasy, because romanticy is one thing, but, like, does Scarlet St. Clair fall under that? You know, does some of these people who write slightly different types of books, but that might fall under that subgenre to someone who just wants more? like, do they find these people, or do they just wait for the next Rebecca Yarros book? So yeah, it's hard to say. I think I talked myself into a circle.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. And I will say, I think you're 100% right about maybe not at this scale, but rom-coms having this kind of bump 4 or 5 years ago at this point. I think the more recent example that was sort of similar to that, that I think was maybe a little bit more regrettable, was the Colleen Hoover effect. Mm-hmm. That was sort of this very dramatic, angsty, just whatever that was. Yeah. So do we think Colleen Hoover is over? Or not over, but like on the downswing?
I mean, maybe a little bit, but like the cycle of the like super angsty, emotional, like everybody's had emotional trauma kind of stories. Like, I think that's a 10-year cycle, because we had those in the early 2010s too.
That's true.
So like, I think, funnily enough, I think she was also in that cycle. Yeah. Like, I think
that's right.
I think some of her older books were in that cycle too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So people are still discovering her because of, you know, NCAPs and that kind of thing. So I don't think she's cycled out. I think Romantasy is taking more of the noise.
Yeah.
But I think for the people who are not going to be interested in fantasy stories, no matter how much romance there is in them, mm-hmm. I think she's still going to be around.
Fine. Okay. I'm just saying. Just read some LA Dev, everybody. Like, what are you doing? It's fine. I know we are preaching to the preacher here, but like, it's fine. Okay. Well, I mean, on the plus side, maybe at the end of 2024, there will be more Sarah J. Maas books on the bestseller list than Colleen Hoover. And I will take that. I'll take it.
All right.
Any other thoughts on Valentine's Day coverage? Oh, actually, one other thing, article that you pointed me toward, Jess, that was another sort of delightful development that we've seen in the last 5, maybe 8 years, mm-hmm. Was one about bookstores.
Yes, I happened across a Forbes article about the... It's not a resurgence, because they weren't there before, but I can't... Upsurgence?
Yeah. Maybe don't call arrival. It an insurgence. the expansion? That's appearance? A boring word, but... The growth
of romance bookstores across the United States. And there were actually some there listed that I did not know had been opened. Mm-hmm. I definitely recommend listeners of this podcast to check and see if there are new ones near you. Like, they talk about, you know, the OG, the Ripped Bodice, but several of them opened last year. Mm-hmm. You know, Love Sweet Arrow has been around, but they moved to a new location. There's one in Maine. There's one in Kansas City. There is our friend Steamy Lit mm-hmm. down in South Florida. I hope to see a new version of this article next year, in which there are 10 more.
Yeah, no joke. Like, Wichita, Chicago, like, they're all over. We'll link to this article too. But I mean, I would say, I don't even know if, and I think we may have talked with Jeff about this too, but I don't even know if the Ripped Bodice had opened when we started this podcast.
You know, I'm not sure.
If it had, it was brand new. So that is another sort of happy, exciting development that we're seeing. And like you said, may the effort succeed for anyone else who's thinking about opening this kind of a bookstore. Hooray for you.
Hooray for you.
All right. Let's take another break, and then maybe we recommend some books, Jess.
Sounds good.
All right, so this segment theme that we're doing recommendations around was my suggestion for a couple of selfish reasons. One is that we're going to be talking about short romances. So short stories, novellas, I was kind of thinking of it as anything under 200 pages, but we can talk more about how we think about short books. Mm-hmm. It happened to be the case that I had been reading a bunch of them. And also, February is a short month, so you can read short books. And also, if you are trying to kind of like juice your book numbers a little bit, you know, if you're like, if you're like, okay, it's February, I'd really hoped to be through 5 books, 10 books, whatever by now, but I'm not where I wanted to be. Yeah. You know what a great way to bump your numbers from like 5 books to 12 books is read very short books. So yeah. It's not a secret. It's a, I think, great strategy. But I will also say I think we've talked about this a little bit on the podcast before, but I really love short romances because when they're done well, I think it's hard to do well, but mm-hmm. when it's done well, I think it's a really impressive kind of artistic feat to be able to do all of the things that you have to do in a romance, but only have 150 pages to do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. When a story is like tight like that, that's one of the things that I love about category romances, actually. Like, they are getting a little longer now, but once upon a time, mm-hmm. I think they had to be like exactly 182 pages or something like mm-hmm. that. And like the sex scene happened at exactly 60%. Like they had a formula and they did it. Yeah. But yeah, there is something about, you know, having a short story where, you know, it's the whole arc is in that small amount of time. And sometimes because of the length, it might be the story about one time together. Like,
yeah.
Like spending a whole night together or something like that. Or yeah. It might be just incredibly well-crafted full length love story, but in 150 pages or 90 or mm-hmm. 75.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there is something to be said about the feat of yeah. of writing a really good novella or novelette or short novel.
Yeah. Or even short story, there was a collection of authors who put out a series of, it was, I think, 6. It was called the Improbable Meet Cute series. They all came out in late January. They all came out together. It was sort of like themed. It was authors that you know, Jasmine Guillory, Christina Lauren, or that you probably know. and I am actually going to talk about one by Sally Thorne, who I haven't read a ton of Sally Thorne. I'm pretty sure she wrote The Hating Game, which I have taken a lot of flack online for the fact that I didn't love. Guys, I don't love enemies to lovers. It's just not for me. It's fine. Anyway, that is an aside. And this part of the reason that I wanted to talk about this one is that I thought it was very sweet and charming. The quality, I will say, of these 6 books varies significantly. But oh. One of the things that I thought was great about this book is that it is legitimately a short story. Mm. It all takes place in there's no scene break. It's one scene. You oh, follow wow. everything that happens. And then it all takes place over the course of maybe like 3 or 4 hours in the same setting in an afternoon, mm-hmm. Which I thought was. And so, you know, obviously it's more of a happily for now as opposed to an HEA because, yeah, of course, yeah. they just met. But I thought it was really charming to have a romance short story because I don't think you see a ton of those, although I'll talk about some other ones later. But it's, I think, maybe 40 pages, and mm-hmm. it is the story of a woman who, there's a silliness to it. She and her sister go for a Galentine's Day trip to the spa. She goes into a flotation tank, and she gets stuck.
Oh, no.
She gets stuck. They cannot open it. They're, like, the emergency release is not working, and so they have to call the fire department to get her out. So this is the vast majority of the book is kind of her being stuck in this flotation tank, talking to the fireman who is like keeping her company because the spa doesn't want them to just bust open the flotation tank because it will void their insurance policy. Like I said, there's definitely like a silliness to it where she is like just stuck in there talking to this fireman, but it's also very charming. There's like some depth to it that's kind of unexpected given that it's a 40-page story about a woman stuck in a flotation tank. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was lovely. And like I said, I thought the use of the short story form to do this kind of a romance was very smart. And frankly, you don't have to do a lot of plot because the entire story is a woman stuck in a flotation tank. Mm-hmm. So like she literally can't plot because she's stuck. So mm-hmm. there's I just thought it was really, really smart and fun. Like I said, it is silly in a lot of ways, but I just thought it was like delightful.
That's great. That reminds me of like Cara Bastone's Audible shorts. There's always something like that. Like the first one I listened to, I think it was Call Me Maybe, and it was like a woman stuck on the side of the road, and mm-hmm. like she's having a phone conversation with somebody, and then it has a little more plot, mm-hmm. but like that kind of situation, and in one of them, like there are people on a bus, and yeah. like they're just on a bus.
Yeah. Yeah. And mm-hmm. yeah. Oh, and it's occurring to me that I don't think I actually said the name of the book, which is a thing that I have not done in a long time. But the book is called Rosie and the Dreamboat. And again, it's by Sally Thorne. And I think you're right, Jess, that a lot of those Audible original, the ones that go straight to audio, mm-hmm. particularly through Amazon. And I know people have complicated feelings about Amazon, but those tend to be sort of short and quick and lovely as well.
Yeah. I was so fascinated by the story that I didn't even notice that you didn't mention the title. Yeah. So I couldn't be like, hey, Trisha, what's that book called?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I gave you the author, but I think probably people have an easier time finding it based on the title, Rosie and the Dreamboat.
Lovely.
How about you? What do you like?
So if you watched the Usher concert that was surrounded by football
so good
recently, you might have noticed that there was a part of that like 13-minute halftime show where people were roller skating.
It was amazing.
It was so good.
It was like the Super Bowl, and that was still the most impressive athletic feat I saw all night.
So good. And I wanted to read about roller skaters at that point. So I dug out a book that I had been meaning to read for a while because I think I pre-ordered it. I was like, roller skating people. And it's called Moonlight, a Skater Love Story by Jasmine Nicole. And this is a little longer. It's 130 pages. But it is about a young woman who inherits a skating rink from her grandfather, and who happens to meet a very handsome gentleman who her grandfather used to compete against. So they have this connection, and she's dealing with sort of what to do next with the rink, and he's still dealing with the grief of losing his own grandfather and connecting with him through the rink. And it's just, it's very, very sweet and emotional. But also there's like some cool skating. And it's a little harder to envision what things look like when people are skate dancing.
Sure.
But since the rink is such a central part of the story, we get to experience people like going out on the rink and doing some couples dancing. And it was cool to think about because that's not something that you see a whole lot. And I just thought it was a really cute story. So that was Moonlight by Jasmine Nicole.
That sounds delightful. I, first of all, am probably going to rewatch that halftime show as soon as we're done here. And then maybe I will check out this book. When I'm having a hard time picturing it, watch the halftime show again.
There you go.
My YouTube algorithm is really weird right now because basically all I've watched over and over again for the last 2 weeks is that halftime show and the Tracy Chapman, Luke Combs performance of Fast Car at the Grammys, which I have watched. Like, I'm a little surprised that the Grammys haven't reached out to me to be like,
are you okay?
This is a lot. Like, we posted this for free, but like, come on, what are you doing? but I will almost certainly watch it 3 more times before all of you hear this podcast, at least. Anyway, so when I'm not watching Tracy Chapman at the Grammys, I am reading books like All or Nothing by Rose Lerner, which is another short one. This one's more in the novella category. I would say it's probably like 150, 170 pages, something like that. And I didn't realize it until I was a little ways into it. But this is one of those ones that, you know how for a while, Jess, there was like collections of novellas on a theme? Mm-hmm. I feel like we've kind of gotten away from that a little bit. But this was part of one that I think it was Molly O'Keefe who put together that were all like gambling themed.
Yeah.
And this book is messy. It is so messy. Not the writing, obviously, because Rose Lerner is wonderful. But it is about a man who is obsessed with a woman. And so he goes to this sort of gambling den, gaming hall, dive bar kind of place to go and see her on a regular basis. And she is there usually with her partner, lover. It's a little best friend. We don't know. I mean, we know like they're kind of all those things. But who regularly bets her as part of the gambling, which she's very also into. Like, she basically tells him, this is who I want to go home with, so you need to lose to this person. And that is the way that it goes. Like I said, it's so messy. And Simon, who's the other main character, has sort of an objection to that. But she gets into a situation where the partner, best friend, lover guy has to leave for a short time, and she doesn't feel necessarily super safe. So he loses her, quote unquote, to Simon. He bets 2 weeks with her, and this guy intentionally loses. So Simon is going to be spending 2 weeks with this woman. He has sort of drawn a line in the sand that he is not comfortable in like a polyamorous sort of situation. He's not comfortable because the power dynamic is such that like she's not he doesn't feel like she's in full control of her autonomy, which she would say that she is. Again, it's so messy. And then he is going during that 2 weeks to go spend a week with his former partner, lover, boyfriend. That one's a little more confusing. And she is going to go with him and like kind of pretend to be with him so that his former guy is not trying to get with him again. It's so messy. It's so complicated. And like, all of these people are a mess. They're like doing their best, but like they are just, you know, they are not what you would call like your well-adjusted, healthy, happy, doing great people. So anyway, it's a delight in a different way than Rosie and the Dreamboat. It's more of like a messy, fun kind of angsty disaster mess. If you're looking for a disaster, angsty, messy fun, don't read Colleen Hoover. Read All or Nothing by Rose Lerner. It's also a lot shorter. You'll be right through it. So anyway, that's my next one, is All or Nothing by Rose Lerner.
Wow. I'm still agape at that one. I'll definitely have to check that out.
Oh, it's such a mess. Oh, such a mess. Anyway, what else you got?
Okay, so this is a name that is familiar, but you might not know that she has written a couple of short novellas. And the book that I definitely recommend checking out is Prisoner of Love by Beverly Jenkins. And this is a historical novella. She's written a couple of contemporary novellas, like for maybe Harlequin and a couple other people. But this one is one of her historicals. And it is fascinating because it is a marriage of convenience between a woman who owns a homestead and a prisoner. Like, prisoners are sort of farmed out as husbands.
Interesting.
For women who need help on the farm, who need a male presence to ward off, you know, bad bad actors, mm-hmm. And that kind of thing. So this woman ends up sort of taking on a husband as kind of, he's not like an indentured servant, like he, because he has taken this on, he's basically free from his prison sentence or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's very strange. The setup is so bizarre that you're just hooked immediately. It's like, how does this happen?
Well, and because it's Beverly Jenkins, it's probably a real thing.
Yes.
You know?
Like, it probably is. Like, I feel like she came across this occurrence in some of her research and was like, I gotta write about that.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, it's a short story, so things happen a little faster, but if you haven't read Beverly Jenkins and you're looking to get your, dip your toe in, I think this is a good one, because then you see how much she puts into a story, even one as short as this one. And like, I can't even really tell you more than that, because that's basically the story. Mm-hmm. These two people are like, all right, we're married now, and they go for it and deal with, you know, the complications of owning a homestead, being Black and owning a homestead, mm-hmm. living in the wilderness, like all of the things that you see in any historical Beverly Jenkins novel.
That sounds amazing. I kind of know what I'm going to spend my weekend doing, which is reading basically every book that you're recommending. but I will also be reading a different book. So I'm about halfway through this one. It's one that I read parts of a long time ago and then have come back to, because I think I'm going to be talking about it on the All the Backlist podcast, spoiler alert, next week. And that is Love in Color by Bolo Babalola. And it is a collection of sort of myths retold, and it is wonderful. There are tales from around the world. Some of the myths are things that I was more familiar with, things like 1001 Nights, Scheherazade. Some I was familiar with the person, like Nefertiti, but not the story. These are all short stories. So it is a book of short stories. They are all love stories. Not all of them have a clear happy ending. So I will kind of give you a heads up about that. But I still think it is worth checking out. So far, none of the ones that I've read have definitely not had a happy ending. It's just that because they're so short and based on these mythologies, it's difficult, I think, to create a definite HEA for folks. It is a book that came out in 2020, did very, very well, I think, in the UK. I think it did fairly well here, but it's one of the many things that I love about collections of short stories is that if you've got 20 minutes to sit and read, you can read an entire story and then come back to whatever the next chapter is whenever you want. So mm-hmm. Again, that's Love in Color. Filled with short, fantastic, brilliant love stories, many of which have a happy ending.
You know, I'm like staring directly at my copy, which I have not yet picked up.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, I think, I don't know about you, I actually have a long weekend, so maybe we will get through all of these books together, Jess.
Maybe we will. Maybe we will.
How about you? You got one more?
One more. And it is one that I have talked about, but not in a while. And it's back on my mind because I got a beautiful special edition hardcover copy of it from Rainbow Crate. And that book is The Companion by E.E. Ottman. We talked a lot about E.E. Ottman for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is an incredible polyamorous mid-century period historical romance by one of the ones who has done it best as far as short novellas are concerned. So you have one person whose name I have completely forgot, but she needs to leave New York City because she wants a different experience. And she goes to stay as a companion with a reclusive writer in the country. And she and the reclusive writer sort of develop this rapport, but leave each other their space. There is also a very beautiful, lovely neighbor who has sort of a relationship with the reclusive writer, but is really interested in the newcomer. So they meet in sort of like randomly in the wilderness, when she's taking a walk one day, and across the three of them, they all have similar experiences in life because they are all trans. And it's just such a lovely book with all of these different dynamics that play together. For such a short book, it is very sexy. Like, there is a lot going on in this book, but also, like, it's very well balanced with the development of the plot. So if you are looking for a lovely historical polyamorous queer trans story, check out The Companion by E.E. Ottoman.
The Craft of Love by E.E. Ottoman is another one that is, I feel like a lot of his books are short, so you could cram a ton of E.E. Ottoman into this weekend.
Yes, I recommend it.
All right. So those are some recommendations. Is there anything else, Jess, that you want to check in on? Anything we missed? Anything romanticy or short story related that we did not cover?
If there is, I will remember it in 24 hours.
Excellent. So we'll talk about it next time.
Yes, we will.
All right. Well, a huge thanks as always to our wonderful audio editor, Caitlin Brame. You can find us on email and social media. As always, you can find us at whenandromance@bookriot.com. You can find me at Trisha Haley Brown on Instagram and Blue Sky. Jess, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Jess_is_reading. You can find me on Blue Sky and still the Hell site at Jess's Reading, all one word. And you can find me on TikTok at Jess_is_reading.
Excellent. Please do rate and review the podcast as a Valentine's Day gift to us, if you don't mind. It helps other folks find the show. And I think that's it for us for this time around.
That is indeed it. Thank you, Trisha, as always. It's been a pleasure. And same to those of you at home, happy reading.